You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Bill Writer with you. A lot of things to dive into. A lot to get into. We're going to burst the bubble on three happy-go-lucky rainbows and puppy dogs lies around the NBA. Sorry, it ain't true. They ain't true. And we're going to disabuse some folks of their notions of greatness. We're also coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. Phone number on the program, if you want to give us a call, 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, SportsWriter, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Kind of a feisty Tuesday. You know what I love? I love ketchup independently, and I love chocolate. I don't put them together. I love the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I love the NBA. But combining them is greedy and stupid and results in a terrible product. We're going to dive into that later in the program. MLB Power Rankings. Chris Trapasso is going to be here on the show. So Chris was on last week. CBS Sports NFL Draft Guru spends the year watching tape. And I wanted to wait until today. Let the dust settle a little bit, let things chill a little bit, and get his overarching 10,000 feet view of the NFL draft. Really looking forward to that conversation. I got some good news this week. I'll be voting for all the NBA awards nationally, MVP, Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year, all of those things. So we'll start to talk about that, have a conversation in the lead up to me filling out that ballot in probably a week or two. Buy or sell at the end of the show with executive producer Tom DiBenedetto. The New Yorker, great magazine. Adam Klug pointed out to me that they write long stories, which is, I guess it's breaking news to Adam Klug, wrote a very long story on UFOs and on the respectability behind bringing them up, including on radio shows like this one. Not that we've ever worried about being respectable. That's probably a goal beyond my powers. Andrew Bogut is not here today, though, so we may save that for tomorrow. So, really big day in the NBA. And I want people to celebrate. I want people to feel good about themselves. I want people to be happy. You score 40 points in an NBA game, right? You're a random guy and you score. It didn't happen, but you're Kyle Kuzma and you score 40 points? Pump your fist, young man. Order an extra drink. Text that lady you've been thinking about. You know, maybe she'll get back to this time. Whatever. Please just don't tell me you're Michael Jordan. Like, this is, we can celebrate together if we do it in a rational way. And yesterday, the NBA ecosystem, the NBA media machine, many of my brothers and sisters who cover the sport, just folks that talk about it, maybe it's laziness, maybe people aren't watching the game, I don't know, tried to sell you and are still trying to sell you three distinct lies. Lie number one, that Russell Westbrook is an impactful player. He's not. Lie number two, that Carmelo Anthony is an all-time great. That is an all-time great lie. And lie number three, that at least as currently constructed, the Lakers and the Knicks proved last night how effective they are. No, they didn't, because they're not. All three of these things have some feel-good moments behind them, right? Russell Westbrook had an incredible stat line. In a big win for the Wizards against the Pacers. 14, 21, and 24. 21 boards, 24 assists make him, and he just did this recently as well, only the second player, which he already was, in the history of the sport to have 20 rebounds and 20 assists in a single game with a guy named Wilt Chamberlain, which is really appropriate because Wilt's one of the most overrated players of all time, but a statistical marvel. And only Russ has done it twice. Melo scored some points in a loss for the Blazers, that a game they needed to win. I think it was 14 points that he got. And is looking Melo, top 10 all-time scorer. Local reporter, doing his job, great reporter. Got an interview with him, and it's just this decadent, loving coverage everywhere. If you go over to the shills up in Bristol, who are trying to sell you things that have nothing to do with sports, there's a whole, like, superhero thing right attached to it. Ooh, what superhero is he? I don't know. Is there somebody whose magic skill is to be so illusionary that everyone thinks he's a superhero when he's really not? Is that a skill? Is there a superhero whose power just pretending to... Actually, I think it's the bad guy in the last Spider-Man film. That's actually exactly what he did. Cool. And give the Knicks credit. And the Lakers and Knicks are in different situations because the Knicks are building something in a way that seems really impressive and could be lasting and real if they can land a next-level guy like a Damian Lillard. And the Lakers, even though they won against Denver last night in a hard-fought game they should have given away but didn't, are total contenders if LeBron is healthy, and they're a mess for several years if LeBron's not, right? The Lakers are a one-man operation, with all respect to Anthony Davis, who played well yesterday, and the Knicks might be building something. But in none of these cases are the storylines that are being put out there even remotely true. Let's dismiss with the Knicks first. They are not even the fourth best team, despite where they sit in the standings, or the fourth most dangerous team in the Eastern Conference. They are great defensively, but they are bottom third in the NBA offensively. And they're not going to be in a conference finals, let alone an NBA finals. And look, I love it. The New Yorker, I mean, it's like double New Yorker time. That same New Yorker issue that has the UFO story has a beautiful cover. And it's the Nets, and it's the Knicks, and it's the joy of basketball returning to New York City. I don't want to hate on that. It's real, and it's cool. The Nets are short to medium term championship contenders. And the Knicks might be longish term championship contenders. There's a lot that goes into getting to that point. But they're one of the teams that have a chance at that. That's amazing. It's awesome. It's Kyle Kuzma scoring 40 points. It doesn't make him Michael Jordan. It doesn't mean that the folks in New York City should start planning the parade just yet. No, slow it down. Maybe for Brooklyn, but not in Manhattan. I actually really like, on a personal level, on a human level, I don't know them well. I don't know Westbrook at all. I've interacted with Melo. It's been 10 years. But what I know about them, what I've read about them, what I've been told by people, Westbrook and Melo are good dudes, man. They are good people, and they're worth rooting for. They are. I can be too. Doesn't mean you should root for me if I ever get a job as a surgeon, right? Like, there's not necessarily a correlation. Russell Westbrook's reality in the postseason is one of utter and total disappointment. And I'm not a big NBA Twitter guy because I'm not a big Twitter guy anything. We, in this society, we overreact to everything. Everything is the worst thing. Everything is evil. Everything is blessed. You're either a sinner or a saint with no in between. You're the best of all time or you're the worst, which is why we're celebrating Melo and the Knicks and Russell Westbrook today. Like, there aren't things to actually look at in the NBA and say, wow, this is Steph Curry is probably a top 10 player of all time, legitimately. Or, man, LeBron James really is Michael Jordan, because without him, a team that was 21-6 now has to battle and scrape to beat a Denver squad that looked like hot garbage, I believe is the technical NBA term. I love Westbrook as a guy. He doesn't move the ball. He can't shoot the three-pointer. He's wildly inefficient. His passion, his energy, his love for the game, it's all incredible, but I've seen this before. This be what? I can't even keep track of what it is. Is it year three or four? He's going to average a triple-double. Oscar Robertson, as you know, is the only other person to ever do that in the NBA. And he did it once. Four times when the season ends, Westbrook will have accomplished it. How many times over those four seasons will Westbrook make it out of the first round of the playoffs? Do you know the answer? It's not many. Westbrook didn't turn from a pumpkin into a coach that's going to lead to the land of milk and honey because he had 21 rebounds and 24 assists. He's always been a statistical marvel, and it doesn't translate in the playoffs. He is fearless. He is willing to take the shots and miss in the postseason. The problem is he misses them. And nobody epitomizes this more than Melo, right? Because Melo just got top 10 all-time on the scoring list.
Top 10 all-time? Must be. Wow, that must be amazing. He's almost Julius Randle. I mean, I can't even believe he's this good.
He's not. He's not that good. He's talented. He's fun to watch. But he's not that good. He's just not. And I could give you all the, you know, what'll sound like hyperbole and try my best to be loquacious and wax, if not poetic, at least something about the difference between the snap, crackle, pop, the snazziness of opportunity and ability and what looks beautiful versus, you know, the whole hair thing versus the turtle just actually getting it done. I'm just going to give you some facts. I'm going to read you every playoff appearance Carmelo Anthony's ever been a part of. And remember, guy's top 10 all the time as a scorer. He has been, or at least prided himself to be, the best player on. He has been. He's been the best player on his team most of these runs. These are the exits of the Carmelo Anthony-led teams over the course of the career in which he has shot so many times that he's an all-time top 10 scorer. Let's go through it. First round exit. 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 Conference finals. Oh, we've turned a corner, right? First round exit. First round exit. First round exit. Second round! Give him a ring! Give him half a ring. He can, like, tape the other half. First round exit. First round exit. This dude's been swept in the first round three times in his career. He's played in 77 playoff games, and by my count, he is 26 and 51 in the postseason. In the postseason, this man that is being celebrated today, you guys that hate Melo don't get it, but today they're going to get it. No, we're not. He has shot 41% from the field in postseason games. He has shot 31.5% from the three-point line. In his postseason performances, when the ball is the unicorn, when it's Excalibur, when you cannot let it get into the hands of the enemy, he has more turnovers than assists. Top 10. Who gives a damn if it doesn't lead to something that truly is historical? For me, Melo's top 10 status as a scorer highlights that he is the biggest waste of talent in the history of maybe the NBA. I'm not the one that made the rules about winning is how you judge these things. That was Michael Jordan. That was Magic. That was Bird. That was every competitor who's ever arrived and had massive talent and understood that it's nothing. It's nothing without victory. And I'm not doing like a Shaq on Barkley. You never got a ring. Barkley got close and cared and tried and did this thing called one in the playoffs at times. Top 10. You know who's top 10 in home runs in his career? Ninth, Sammy Sosa. You want to have a conversation about his historical greatness? Me either. I'm going to give you two names of guys that have thrown among the 10 most touchdowns in the history of the National Football League. Both are Melos, talented, likable, good dudes whose skill has been the background and the illumination of their disappointment, not their greatness. Phillip Rivers, fifth all-time in touchdown passes. Matt Ryan, 10th all-time in touchdown passes. At least Matt Ryan got into a Super Bowl. Matt Ryan won more games. He won more playoff games in that Super Bowl run than Melo wins in years at a time. And as you know, the NBA has this thing called a series. The NFL's a one-off. And I'm not making that set up. That's actually a fact. I like Melo. I like Westbrook. I like the Lakers. Man, the Lakers were so bad yesterday. Played great defense. Denver was just worse. Denver went on a 14-2 run at the end of the game, had a chance to close it out. Michael Porter Jr. hit a three that would have given them the lead, and they got waved off from a garbage foul that was called. I know those things happen. But the Lakers didn't show themselves to be some remarkably tough team. Anthony Davis played well. I have to celebrate him now after six dud games. If the Lakers can barely beat Denver on a night like that without LeBron, they can't beat anybody without LeBron. He knows it. They know it. You know it. And I don't want to hate on the Knicks, man. That was a good win. And they're playing really well. It's just, I don't like, I mean, I do understand. I was going to say, I do understand why we're all talking about the Knicks and how all of a sudden they're a championship contender. And nobody's talking about Denver. Denver's the 3 seed. I don't hear that much talk on national sports radio about how the Nuggets are the real thing. And they made a conference finals last year. They actually made a run last season. If the Knicks are contenders, does that mean so are the Atlanta Hawks, who are just behind them? That's because they're New York. I actually think Atlanta's pretty interesting. I think Atlanta and the Knicks can win a series they shouldn't. And I think that's a huge accomplishment. I just don't think they can win 2, let alone 4. They shouldn't. Let's be rational. The Knicks don't have to be championship contenders to be a story worth celebrating. Neither do the Hawks. Westbrook doesn't have to be an overly impactful player to marvel at what he is great at. Even if it doesn't. And it doesn't transition to the postseason. And Melo doesn't have to be an all-time great. Every person I know thinks this is stupid. And I mean every person. Every GM, every superstar player, every media member. It's fine. That's cool. I'll live on this little island by myself. I'll grow my Tom Hanks beard. I'll find a volleyball. I'll put some lipstick on it. We can be best friends. But on that island, Wilson! I don't think Melo's a Hall of Famer. I just don't. I think too many people are in the Hall of Fame. It's not a Hall of Fame of talent. It's not a Hall of Fame of how many shots you took. Sosa's not a Hall of Famer. Phillip Rivers is not a Hall of Famer. Melo's not a Hall of Famer. You got to win. For me. Look, I'd love there to be a highly celebrated Hall of Mediocrity because I would own that baby. I'd have the biggest statue in there. Rather than you. We did it. We made it. We made it. All right. You can defend. You want to defend Melo? Why would you? You want to defend Melo? It's cool. We can do that. Let me just say this about Melo real quick. Remember when he forced his way out of Denver to the Knicks and made the Knicks gut the entire organization rather than wait 3 or 4 months because he was worried that the CBA was going to get redone in the shutdown and he was going to lose some money? The Knicks have not made a conference finals since then. The Nuggets have. The Knicks are not actual contenders this year. The Nuggets are. I mean, come on now. Let's see things as they are. All right, 855-212-4CBS if you want to weigh in. I understand you got to make money. I got it. And I know that the giant rat up there in Bristol is a money-making machine. I even understand that. I'm not mad at anybody for getting their money. But please, can the folks who run Marvel and Star Wars and have an NBA contract and think they're smarter than everybody else, please stop insulting our collective intelligence? Why the Marvel game is actually a huge problem for real sports fans next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
What's up? Welcome to the show. Bill Ryder with you. Thanks for hanging out. Welcome to this Ted Lasso edition of the show. No, just kidding. It's so dumb. We'll get to Marvel and the giant rat in a minute. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. It's one fact I want you to have. Here's another one, just so you know. I'm here for you. It's Bill Ryder looking out. Because Saturday, it's a big day of sports on CBS, beginning at 1 Eastern, 10 Pacific, with the National Women's Soccer League Challenge Cup Final. Then at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific, it's off to the golf course, where some of the PGA Tour's best will be on the tee, compete at the Wells Fargo Championship. That's all coming up Saturday on CBS. Again, 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Patrick Heber tweets at Sports Writer. I thought about this, and I think it's an interesting thought experiment. Bill, the Pistons always get ripped for drafting Darko instead of Melo, but I bet they wouldn't have won their 0-4 title with him. They were the ultimate team. So, I think it's actually a reasonable perspective. I don't agree with it, and I'm going to tell you why, but I think it's reasonable. The Pistons, I always cite, right, you got to be in the top 10 in offensive and defensive rating, and there's only two teams that don't fit that. One is a Lakers team that basically did, that in the midst of their dominance just stopped playing defense, but were the best team defensively in the NBA the year before, think the third best the next year, and were the best defensive team in the playoffs. That Shaq Kobe team, they just, when the Shaq was basically, I don't care. I'm going to pull James Harden in advance, eat a lot of donuts. That's cool. Terrible Shaq, by the way, wasn't that? Terrible Shaq. It's okay. It's not what it sounds like. And the other was that Pistons team, because they were a team. They were a team. I just think that the Melo that we're talking about doesn't exist in that alternate universe. I think he comes out of Syracuse. He's just won a national championship. He's impressionable. And that is a tough locker room, right? Chauncey Billups, Rip Hamilton. And a whole group of guys who I think would have impressed upon Carmelo Anthony, good guy, how to be a great player, how to be a great pro. And I think they actually win multiple championships because Melo's talent plus that culture makes him into a totally different player. But you could be right. You could be right. I don't know. I like the Marvel movies. I talk about them on the radio. I do not care if people think that's dorky or stupid. You're stupid or dorky. How's that? Name calling, right? Pretty ineffective and pointless. Yesterday, Marvel dropped like a four-minute trailer of stuff that's already happened through the Marvel Universe. And then, you know, a minute of it is basically footage from a couple of the upcoming movies that have been shot but not released. And then the release dates and the name. Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, like 3 years from now. I'm all in. Let's go. Wakanda Forever, baby, let's go. I like the Marvel movies. I obviously like sports. But can the giant rat in Bristol just stop with like the pure greed pull? I need to watch Draymond Green hit a three and have some kind of trail and then some creature from a Marvel film appear above the basket. And the pained hero points. He's got 24 hero points. Do you know what would be a real hero point? One of these announcers who sound like they're having panic attacks on the air, just being the hero that we all need, looking the Thanos that is Disney in the eye and saying, this is stupid. This is dumb. Here's what I'll do. When I want to watch a Marvel movie, I'll go to Disney Plus and watch one of the 500 Marvel movies over there. Marvel NBA. And please don't give me the Nickelodeon thing. Nickelodeon was about kids and was on a different channel. You want to do ESPN2 Marvel game so that the seven people who want to watch... Here's the other thing. As a Marvel fan, it wasn't a Marvel-themed thing. I know what a Marvel movie is. I know what it's about. I know how good they are. That's just a giant advertisement. You know what's a better advertisement? Watching the trailers on YouTube like my son does without permission. That's a better advertisement for the Marvel movies. And I remember thinking yesterday, because I don't pay attention. God, at least it'll be a while before this stupid, greed-fueled idiocy happens. And then Lori last night goes, hey, tomorrow's May the 4th. May the 4th be with you. And then immediately I'm like, oh, my God, they're doing a Star Wars thing. I saw it, forgot about it. There's some stupid Star Wars game tonight. I don't even know the details. Look, I understand that money's part of the deal. I got it. I'm not mad at the Yankees or the Dodgers for outspending and basically destroying the hopes and dreams of most small markets because that's allowed within the rules. I don't love it. I'm not mad at the Yankees and the Dodgers. It's America, baby. You got money? Go spend it. I have zero issue with Kirk Cousins making whatever it's going to be, more than $100 million guaranteed, even while the Vikings reportedly really want to get Justin Fields and then watch with a horror that makes my heart sing when the Bears jumped up and got it. Make your money, Kirk. Get paid. I have colleagues in the business that I'm in. I'm thinking of one in particular who have jobs that, you know, aren't very important and they're not very good at them and they make a ton of money. Awesome. I'm not going to be angry or jealous or put, go make your cash. But there's a limit for me. I mean, I'm still trying to get my mind around the fact that most arenas and stadiums are named after some company. I know it's commonplace. I hate it. Like the day it's Google Wrigley Field, I'm over. I'm done. I might go be a Cardinals fan. That's how angry I will be. But this is a whole other level. It's insulting to the intelligence of fans. There's nowhere else to watch it. What if you're just a Warriors fan and you don't like the Marvel movies or you hate them or you think they're stupid or you have no interest? You have to watch some commercial? The Giant Rat in Bristol, and they're really in Burbank, but in a sports sense in Bristol, made so much money. They're making so much, even with their parks closed. You have to ruin the viewing experience so that you can cross-promote the superhero movies. I'm good, man. This is what this is. It's bad for sports. It's bad for the NBA. It looks small time. It looks amateurish. This is the same company, by the way. The new head of the Giant Rat in Bristol got rid of every journalist that's there, basically. Everybody that's a journalist, gone. Gone. Outside the Lines doesn't really exist. I mean, I can go through the whole list. This is why, you know, hey, having some journalistic standards and understand that there is a news value is important. Hate everything about it. You just wait till the NFL draft is the, you know, Marvel Phase 4 NFL draft in 8 years, right? Where everyone reading the pick is some Marvel character. Whatever version of Captain America's around. In costume. In character. What's that line from old school? No, Wedding Crashers? Dance, clown! They're not just talking to the actors. They're talking to you and me. All right. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Let's get a CBS Sports Radio update with Brett Heller.
Hey, Bill, good morning. We're going to start with some football news. Jimmy Garoppolo joined the DA show on CBS Sports Radio last hour, and one of the focuses was talking about drafting a quarterback, and DA asked Garoppolo his mindset going into next season now that the Niners have Trey Lance on board.
I know it's going to be some competition between us, like it was with me and Tom when I got drafted to New England. But, you know, at the end of the day, all you could ask for is the opportunity. And so once they said you'll have the opportunity to start this year and, you know, fight it out, I was all for it. I'm ready for the competition, and that's what we're here for.
And Garoppolo said John Lynch told him they'd be drafting a quarterback beforehand, and he said he appreciated Lynch being straightforward. Meanwhile, from NFL.com, Jets defensive lineman Quinnen Williams breaking a small bone in his foot. He's likely going to have surgery. He's going to miss OTAs and likely minicamp, but should be healthy in time for training camp. From the NBA, the Lakers snapped their three-game losing streak last night, beat the Nuggets 93-89. That was without LeBron, who rested his sore ankle. Anthony Davis scored 25 points. The Wizards put up 154, beat the Pacers 154-141. Russell Westbrook locking up a triple-double average for the fourth time in his career. He had a career-high 21 rebounds, a career-high tying 24 assists. He's the only player in NBA history with multiple 20-rebound, 20-assist games. The Warriors and the Pelicans, it was Steph versus Zion, and Steph outscored Zion on the night.
Double team finds JTA back to Curry. Curry, little daylight, steps out for a three look, and it's nothing but net for Curry. He's got 36. It's a 13-3 run in this game of ebbs and flows, and it's a 16-point Warrior lead.
Tim Roy on Warriors Radio. Steph had 41, Zion 32. The Warriors winning it 123-108 over the Pelicans. Those two teams will play again tonight. The Sixers, five straight wins. They beat the Bulls 106-94. Philadelphia, one-game lead on Brooklyn for the top spot in the East. The Nets and the Bucks will meet tonight in Milwaukee. The Jazz, a half game up on the Suns for the top spot in the West. Utah beat San Antonio 110-99. The Suns will be in Cleveland tonight. Carmelo Anthony passing Elvin Hayes for 10th on the NBA's all-time scoring list in the Blazers' 123-114 loss to the Hawks. From baseball, the Cardinals have won five straight. They edged the Mets 6-5. Nolan Arenado with a three-run homer. Cardinals and Brewers tied for first in the NL Central at 17-12. The Brewers lost to the Phillies 4-3. The Mets, by the way, fired their hitting coaches, Chili Davis and Tom Slater. The Dodgers and the Cubs are going to play a day-night doubleheader today at Wrigley. Clayton Kershaw and Trevor Bauer, the starters for the Dodgers. L.A. is a half a game behind San Francisco in the NL West. The Giants and Rockies are going to play a doubleheader today. The Padres are a game back as they shut out the Pirates by the score of 2-0. Injury news, Dustin May, the Dodgers pitcher, needs Tommy John surgery. White Sox outfielder Luis Robert, a torn hip flexor. No baseball activities for at least 3 to 4 months. From the NHL, the Oilers and the Bruins both clinching playoff spots with wins last night. The Rangers and the Blackhawks both eliminated. And from soccer, Roma is named Jose Mourinho as its new manager just 2 weeks after he was fired by Tottenham. Bill, back to you.
Brad, thank you, buddy. All right, 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. MLB power rankings. It's a hard one. A few surprises. They're all 100% accurate. Next year on CBS Sports Radio.
Some will rise. Others will fall.
Like three, you're out.
Let the ranking begin on Writer Than You's MLB Power Rankings. Number 5.
Let's give a little bit of love to the NL Central. Come on down, Chicago Cubs. I'm just kidding. That's a joke. I'm a Cubs fan. No, Milwaukee Brewers playing well, winning close games, tied with the Cardinals atop a division that I think is going to be fairly interesting. Not dominant, but all of those teams have a chance to be, you know, mediocre to good, which is going to make it, I think, really, really competitive. And I think the Brewers are a really nice baseball team. I think they're interesting. They have a good pitching staff, and their offense has been lackluster. But Lorenzo Cain just came back. I know it doesn't seem like a big name. Dude hit a homer in his first at-bat, his first return. He's always been a catalyst for teams. He was in Kansas City. He has been in Milwaukee. I really like that Brewers team. Can't point to the kind of overwhelming possible talent, offensive or pitching and offensive, that will rise up with some of the teams that are going to be on this list. But they quietly go about their business. They deserve respect. They've been a very winning ball club the last several years. Put some respect on the Brewers name.
Number 4.
Speaking of which, I totally botched this last time. I should have had the A's on this list and just completely forgot that they exist at all. Like the Indians in Major League. You have a team? No. Yeah, we've got uniforms and everything. Then I do the little clap. Oh, that's great. They're such an interestingly constructed team because there's not a lot of offensive or even pitching talent you could point to in a vacuum. I think they're 13th in runs scored and 18th in runs allowed. They're very statistically mediocre, but they went on such a remarkable hot streak. It does have that Billy Beane Moneyball sense, right? Where you look at this team, and again, to quote Major League, I don't even know these bleeping guys. And yet there's something about the way that they're playing and the level of belief and something, some sort of secret sauce that Beans put together, only it's happening early, which is a really good sign. I didn't take that long to connect. Just a really good A's team. And good A's teams are usually really, really good. I apologize, Oakland. You guys are legit. We got you on the list.
Number 3.
All right, here's where I cop out a little bit. Actually, this is dedicated to Tom. Tommy Ty Ties over here. Tom DiBenedetto. He loves ties. He loves indecision. He loves alliteration.
Bye.
Yeah, you do. I have the Padres and the Giants here together. They're basically in a statistical dead heat, along with the Dodgers, in that NL West. And they're very similar. Their offenses have been lackluster. Both are in the bottom third of runs scored in Major League Baseball. And their pitchings are 1 and 2, respectively, in baseball. Padres and Giants. And I'll get to the Dodgers in a second. And not that one injury to one team makes another team's pitching staff better, but it is going to be an arms race between the Giants and the Padres. And the reality is that Dustin May, an ace-level number 4 starter, is out for the season for L.A., for the Dodgers, which is just brutal. And so that war of attrition is going to be really, really significant. It's going to matter. Padres put together a remarkable farm system, most of it offensive, and then went out and got some arms. Right? Yu Darvish, as an addition, is obviously a high-end shot of adrenaline into that pitching staff. The Giants are a little bit different in how they construct their team. I've talked about Farhan Zaidi a little bit. I'm familiar with him from my time doing radio here in Los Angeles. He's not even the GM. I think he's the president of baseball ops. He's the big shot. But he's in charge of the decisions, right? It's semantics for us mortals who don't have those kind of titles. And what he does, and what the Dodgers did before they went out and got Trevor Bauer and developed Walker Buehler and Julio Urias and Dustin May beforehand, is that they are able somehow, and it's an amazing thing, and I'd love to know how they unlock this code, but the best sabermetricians have realized that the real value is the Red Sox model, that you do three things simultaneously. One, you go old school, and you build a remarkable farm system. And you do it with some new school technology and thoughts and ways to analyze, but you build a farm system, right? Two, you make massive free agent signings. And that hasn't happened yet with the Giants, but it will. That's an ambitious organization with a history of success in a major market. And we know that, right? Trevor Bauer, Mookie Betts. I mean, I can go through all the lists of all the teams. The third one, though, and it's something the Dodgers have been really effective at, the Red Sox were when they were really good, that the Yankees have missed out on, which is, I think, a part of the reason they're not World Series champions with the frequency this century they should be. And it is a criticism of their GM, is that the really smart sabermetricians, right? The guys, because the folks like Cashman or others who are looking at sabermetrics today the way that was done 10 years ago are already behind the curve. I know what FIP is, and therefore I'm a great... No, that doesn't... No, man, you're behind. If I know about it and the casual fan knows about it and that's what you're operating on, you're behind. Because Friedman and Zaidi are doing things that other people don't understand. And Friedman and Farhan Zaidi, now the guy in charge of the Giants, was with the Dodgers, have had this magical... It's like it's alchemy, this secret recipe only they understand. Where they are able to find pitchers of suspect value and ability and somehow understand that plugged into the right situations and using whatever code they have for situational pitching, it turns the pitching staff into a diamond. And that we take that for granted now at the Dodgers because you can just look at the talent on the roster they've developed and you're like, wow. But the Dodgers have had a top 5 to 10 bullpen since Andrew Friedman came in, including when they didn't have the quote-unquote talent. They're doing that right now at the Giants. So they're dangerous and they're legit and they're overachieving. But they're going to get to where the Padres and the Dodgers are in terms of talent. Some of it is already on the roster, and we just didn't recognize it. Mike Yastrzemski is a great example, injured, but a great example of what a 27-year-old rookie last year that they recognized was a major league hitter. And a lot of it's going to be on the pitching side. But I'm done sleeping on the Giants. The NL West is going to be the best division in baseball for a really long time.
Number two.
A lot of surprises so far this year, right? I mean, a lot of teams who are playing exceptionally well, you didn't expect to be in the mix, and the Giants certainly would be one of those teams. Kansas City Royals are still leading their division, have one of the better records in baseball. But the one that's most surprising is the Boston Red Sox. That offense continues to churn out runs. Their run differential right now is plus 20. It's one of the best in baseball. Now, there's some teams like Toronto and the White Sox on the American League side that are statistically more impressive. But the Red Sox pitching has actually gotten better. We've had this conversation over the last few weeks. Oh, they're really good offensively. Their pitching's okay. Actually, they're fourth in offense. Their pitching has gone team earned run average from 19th in Major League Baseball 2 weeks ago to 11th today. It just feels a lot like that A's team. And if you watch them play, and I watch a lot of Red Sox games because my brother's wife's parents were really cool, are big Red Sox fans. And I just, you know, you sort of root for teams that people you like root for. They're really good. They look like a team that understands that what they got to do, and they don't have the same level of pressure that, say, the Yankees do. Not a lot of expectation, plus being underestimated, plus some guys coming back into form after a weird 2019 has made them one of the best teams in baseball.
Number one.
It's still the Dodgers. And I read something today I thought was really smart. And by the way, the Dodgers, I think, are half a game behind the best record in baseball, even though they lost 3 out of 4 to the Padres and have had some disappointing games and lost Dustin May. Here's the reality. They don't need to win 8 of their next 10 games. They just need to keep their head above water and find a way to effectively keep pace with the Padres and with the Giants. And that's what they've always understood in LA. Even with Dustin May going down and it's brutal, they still have the best pitching staff in baseball, certainly in May. This is a team that manipulates in a pretty effective and interesting way the use of their starting rotation. It's almost a catch-22 because they will move guys around, and it helps. Trevor Bauer likes to pitch on 3 days rest and can physically do it while limiting pitch counts. So they're somehow able to limit their younger guys' pitch counts while still manipulating the system to get more starts for their top-end rotation guys. So you're not going to see a fifth starter probably have to pitch in Los Angeles until the end of the month. And their fifth starter isn't going to be a superstar, but whoever it is going to be more effective than a lot of teams' fourth starters. Julio Urias, by the way, is still a massive talent. They're not going to let him pitch a lot of innings. And the Dodgers have a really, really good bullpen. They're fourth, in team earned run average so far this year. Kershaw's pitching at a Cy Young level. He is. Trevor Bauer's pitching at a Cy Young level. And one of the things they do that I think is really smart is they will move guys around and move them up to pitch in doubleheaders, which other teams should be paying attention to, because it's a seven-inning game. So if Kershaw cruises, right, they can pull him in the sixth and go to their closer. If Trevor Bauer is pitching, and he's going to pitch on short rest today, if Trevor Bauer is just lights out, his complete game is seven innings. He can go 6 1/3 or 6 2/3, and they can just come in and get an out. It's really, really smart. They're still the best team in baseball. And run differential is not everything, right? It's not everything. But the second highest run differential in baseball is the White Sox at plus 20. No, excuse me, is the Astros at plus 32. There's plus 28, there's plus 27. The Dodgers are plus 45. Even though they're only 17-12, they have games where they just dominate, and almost every game they've lost this year has been a close game, and many have been in extra innings. And what does that tell you? That in the statistical model the Dodgers have put together, they're going to win. They're still going to win 102 or 105 games. At a point, they're going to win 17 of 20 games because those one-run games they've lost are going to be one-run games that they win. They're the best team in baseball. I don't think, personally, it's even close.
Honorable mention.
The Cardinals are not on here, and I apologize, St. Louis. I know we're on the air. They've won five in a row. They have a run differential that's incredibly impressive. They're the Cardinals. It's pettiness. I'm just going to be honest about who I am. I'm a Cubs fan, and I don't just dislike the Cardinals for their excellence historically, but how they're probably the best run team culture-wise in baseball. I think the Dodgers are the best run team in baseball right now. But the Cardinals are really good, and I know I'm sleeping on them, and it's intentional. I apologize.
Here's your participation trophy.
I mean, here come the White Sox, and I'm not there yet because I have a history and a connection to Kansas City, and the Royals have super overachieved. But the moment the White Sox win 3 out of 4 and the Royals lose 3 out of 4, they're going to jump onto this list. They're fun, they're interesting, they're exciting, they're dynamic. They're a really, really good baseball team.
Better luck next time.
All right, this is the last one. I'm just going to throw out here the NL East. I mean, the Mets just fired their hitting coach and their assistant hitting coach. You don't want to make too much of it because those guys were pre-Steve Cohen and pre-their current manager and pre-their current power structure. So in a lot of ways, I mean, they were looking for an excuse, I'm sure, to move on. But they've been wildly disappointing. Again, their offense is paltry and awful. Phillies, meh. The Nationals are meh. Atlanta's borderline not very good, and Miami is not very good. Man, Derek Jeter. Can I just do a quick pause? If we did a power rankings of all the teams, I would add like a 40th slot, right? I'd have a huge gap, and then just Derek Jeter be number 40. Number 4, Derek Jeter. You suck, Derek Jeter. Super overrated, Derek Jeter. Should send him
number 1,234.
Derek Jeter. Hey, Derek, can I give you a little advice? Good. Remember those gift baskets you used to utilize with such grace? You should send one to every Marlins fan on the face of the earth as an apology for your stewardship of that team. Man, that hasn't worked. Sometimes being great at the game doesn't mean you're great at running it, John Elway. We'll get to that later. Nate Silver Bullet to the Truth. Is that the guy's name? No, not Nate. Michael Silver Bullet to the Truth wrote a story. Elway's amazing. I love him. A joke. All right, let's do some NFL draft talk with Chris Trapasso next on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
What an interesting way and a unique way to make a living and see the world, to spend your entire year preparing for and watching tape of the NFL draft. It takes a very unique talent to do that. We've got a great guy at CBS Sports and Chris Trapasso, who is that guy. And I'm always curious, after all of that work and speculation and reporting and research and just hours and hours watching tape, when you get a chance to breathe, how you look back at the draft that has consumed not just your life, but the life of every NFL executive whose job it is to try and properly prepare their team for the future. So Mr. Trapasso is back. He was with us last week, and he's going to give us a 2020 hindsight view. Chris, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me again.
No problem. A really interesting draft, and there's just so much to hit. I normally would sort of let you start wherever you want, but as a Bears fan, I'm just going to go straight to Justin Fields. What is your assessment? What do you make of Chicago moving up for presumably their quarterback of the future? Although I've heard that before.
It is a necessary move that they needed to make, and I really applauded them for doing it. I didn't think from pick number 20 overall they were going to be able to do that, but as they saw Justin Fields fall, they made that ascension. And with Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy really on the hot seat, they need to make the playoffs and maybe even win a playoff game to keep their jobs and to just, like you're mentioning, fortify that quarterback spot for the first time in seemingly forever, it was the correct decision. There was no reason for Justin Fields to fall, even to pick 11. He was an elite quarterback prospect. So there were a lot of other teams, the Washington football team, the Patriots, that were kind of rumored to be a club that would move up to pick Justin Fields, but it was ultimately the Bears. So I applaud them for making that ascension.
Chris, not that, you know, we focus so much on the first round, but looking, taking a broader view, and you certainly include obviously the first round, but the entirety of the draft, all of it, you know, rounds one through seven, is there a team or a couple teams that to you really just crushed the whole draft more or less all the way through?
This is going to be music to your ears, Bill. I think the Chicago Bears had the best draft of any team in the entire NFL. And it's not just about Justin Fields, although that can't be overstated how important that is, because as we've seen for many teams around the league, getting the right quarterback can change around your franchise. Look at the Buffalo Bills. I'm a Buffalo guy, and Josh Allen getting to town, and by year two, he took a next step. And then last year, the Bills had a fantastic season, get all the way to the AFC title game. They've added pieces around him, but Josh Allen is the foundation of that team. So if the Bears found that with Fields, I think they will take off in the NFC North. And then later in round two, to get an offensive tackle, Tevin Jenkins from Oklahoma State, that a lot of people, including myself, thought was a first-round talent at 39 overall. I thought was very smart after you picked that quarterback. And then later, in the sixth round, Khalil Herbert, the running back from Virginia Tech, was one of the most elusive and difficult-to-tackle running backs in this entire class. He's not crazy fast, but for me, when you watch a running back, the most important skill is just that natural ability to make defenders miss. He can do that. I love Daz Newsome out of North Carolina. He was another one of their sixth-round selections. Very sudden, very elusive in the open field. He's a great returner. And I even like their third sixth-round pick, Thomas Graham, who was an opt-out cornerback from Oregon. 32 pass breakups and 8 interceptions in his last 3 years for the Ducks. So you could say whatever you want about watching film and checking the pro day numbers. If you're having that much production on the football as a cornerback, you're doing something right. So I think from round one all the way to round six and even round seven, the Chicago Bears upgraded their team better than any other team in the NFL.
Chris Trapasso making my day somewhere. Jay Cutler's skin is burning because it feels so wrong. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. All right, so for the Bears to be able to go up and get Fields at 11, some things had to happen. And one of those things, obviously, is the Denver Broncos with a new GM installed and in charge. Not theoretically, technically, supposedly John Elway making the decisions. The Broncos pass on a quarterback. What was your assessment of the Broncos' first decision in the draft and just their draft overall?
Well, what's fascinating about this, it came out right before, and we're still in this Aaron Rodgers saga. I thought right away when they picked Patrick Surtain over Justin Fields, and Mac Jones was still on the board there as well, that they maybe had something in the works with Aaron Rodgers. Because for their new GM, George Payton, and I've said it many times during the pre-draft process, that he was in Minnesota for the Brett Favre trade. He was in Minnesota when they signed Kirk Cousins to the first ever fully guaranteed contract for a quarterback. I thought he was definitely going to pick a quarterback at number 9 overall to start his tenure as a GM in Denver with a quarterback. We haven't seen anything on the Aaron Rodgers front fully materialize. If that does, I'm okay with that. But otherwise, if it does not happen, and I don't hate Drew Locke, I think they do deserve to keep him on the – or he deserves to be on the roster still. I think going corner over quarterback inside the top 10 was the wrong decision. I think Patrick Surtain is going to be a good player. I don't know if he's ever going to be amazing, but I do like what they did after that. Javonte Williams, the running back out of North Carolina, they get him right in front of the Miami Dolphins, trade up to make sure Miami doesn't pick him, add him to that backfield. I don't know if it was necessary because they have Melvin Gordon, but he's a good player. Baron Browning, the linebacker from Ohio State, I think has the athleticism to be that sideline-to-sideline type. And then don't forget two defensive backs they picked on day three. Jamar Johnson, the safety from Indiana, was an absolute nightmare for Justin Fields and that Ohio State offense and that really tight game between the Buckeyes and the Hoosiers in the fall. They get him in the fifth round. I think he's a good ball hawk. And then in the seventh round, Kerry Vincent Jr., an opt-out player, cornerback from LSU, all over the football in that LSU national title winning season of 2019. Very good nickel cornerback that we know is very vital today. So I think the Broncos did a good job in terms of their overall draft, generally speaking, but I really would have liked to see them address the most important position on the field in the first round.
Chris Trapasso here on the show. Chris, how'd the Jets do?
I think they did a good job overall based on how they built around Zach Wilson. And we know that that's vital to build around your young quarterback, Elijah Vera Tucker. I think that trade up for a guard was a little costly, but I think their GM, Joe Douglas, understands and just witnessed what happened to Sam Darnold, that they never really built around him. The skill position talent wasn't great. The offensive line was pretty porous. That probably precipitated that trade up to get an offensive lineman who is a very good prospect. Elijah Moore, the wide receiver out of Ole Miss at 34 overall, a lot of people had him as a first-round pick to get him at the top of the second. And then Michael Carter, another North Carolina skill position player in the fourth round. I think his pass-catching ability and how good he is in space, he will be a favorite target for Zach Wilson on checkdowns, on screens, those high-percentage throws that are very important for a young quarterback to just complete a pass and live to see another down early in his career. So for a team that needed offensive line help, needed better skill position talent, younger skill position talent, to go offense, 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 offense with their first four picks, I think was very smart for this Jets organization that, too, is trying to find its first real quarterback in a very long time.
Chris Trapasso, let's say that the NFL draft was part Hunger Games, and whoever had the worst draft was in mortal danger, right? Was in big trouble. Who would be fearing for their lives today? Who had the worst draft?
The San Francisco 49ers. I did not like what they did beyond going Trey Lance over Mac Jones at number 3 overall. I think that was the correct decision. But after that, I talking about building around your young quarterback, they pick Aaron Banks, the guard out of Notre Dame at 48 overall. And what's interesting about this selection, why I didn't like it, Aaron Banks is a power blocker. He's not great on the move. He's not very mobile. And we know that Kyle Shanahan uses those stretch runs and likes mobile, agile offensive linemen. That's not just what Aaron Banks is. And we also know that Kyle Shanahan can get the most out of undrafted running backs, late round picks. They pick Trey Sermon in the third round and then pick another running back in the sixth round. When they have Raheem Mostert, they got good production out of Jeff Wilson. I was surprised that they used two picks on a running back in this draft class. And then even another offensive lineman, Jalen Moore, that they picked in the fifth round. Similar player to Aaron Banks. He is a phone booth type of guy that's going to win in man-to-man situations and is not great getting laterally down the line of scrimmage for those outside zone plays that are a staple in Kyle Shanahan's offense. So I didn't hate what they did, but I thought of all the teams, they had the least inspiring and kind of most confusing draft class in 2021.
Chris, Urban Meyer is going to be such an interesting case study in a lot of things entering the National Football League. Talent, ego, the transition from the college game and success of the NFL. How did that first draft go for them?
Early on, I think it was okay. Later on, I wasn't as high on what the Jaguars did. And what you just introed that with is vital, because if Urban Meyer, if his ego's too big, if he thinks it's recruiting and he's just going to get the best players, like he mentioned, that's not going to happen in the NFL. There's not going to be as much of a disparity in the talent every single weekend like there was when he was at Florida and at Ohio State. His comments about Travis Etienne after the draft, that they drafted a third down back at number 25 overall, that's troubling. I mean, Etienne is a great prospect. He needs to be pretty much the feature guy, even if they have James Robinson there. If you're going to pick a running back in the first round, he's got to be getting a lot of touches. Walker Little, the offensive lineman from Stanford, kind of a high upside guy. We haven't seen him play since week one of the 2019 college football season. He got injured in that game and then opted out, but was a big recruit, looked like someone that was trending toward being a first-round pick, and they do have a need there at left tackle. So if he's healthy, I think that was a great value selection at 45 overall, especially after picking Trevor Lawrence. And I really liked Andre Sisco from Syracuse. They get him in the third round. Ball hawking safety. He had 7 interceptions as a true freshman and then followed that up with 5 interceptions in 2019. Got injured early in 2020, but has elite range and ball hawking skills. Later, Luke Farrell, the tight end from Ohio State. I'm not sure if Urban Meyer recruited him. I thought he was not great after him. Been a top 150 pick of him. And then Jalen Camp in the 6th round, very raw but fast wide receiver from Georgia Tech. So I like the players that they picked early on to build around Trevor Lawrence, but I agree with you. It's really not about this draft. It's about Urban Meyer keeping his ego in check and understanding that his team is going to have to win with X's and O's and good scheming and good play calling. He's not going to have a talent advantage at every position like he did in college.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. Chris, last team-specific question. It is easy and sometimes fun to make fun of the Raiders and their decision-making. What is, with the benefit of hindsight and all of the picks in, what is the proper evaluation of the decision-making that came out of Las Vegas over the draft?
Well, this is kind of funny. You have to look at their first and their second-round picks, Alan Merrick, and flip them around because everyone had down there the safety for TCU that they picked in the second round as a first-round talent. The second round pick that the Raiders picked at number 17 overall. I actually liked Leatherwood as like an early second round pick, so I didn't hate the selection at 17 because the Raiders had a mass exodus on our offensive line this offseason. And we know that the car is not crazy mobile, he's not an improvisational quarterback. So to say, hey, we're not going to be able to get this guy in round 2, let's just pick him here. I didn't hate it from that perspective. And then to get Trayvon Merrick, who to me was the best all-around safety in this draft at a position that is becoming more valuable in today's NFL. You've got to be able to cover tight end, cover the slot, blitz, be a good run defender. Safeties are more valuable. And to get another good one there, I think, was really important. And then one other player that I'll highlight, Malcolm Kuntz, the edge rusher from Buffalo, did not get to test during the pre-draft process because of injury. This class uses his hands pretty well too, and we know that that Raiders defense has been pretty bad during the John Gruden era. They need more pass rushing help to pair him with the safety, add to that secondary. I actually didn't hate what the Raiders did, although they got a lot of criticism right after the 2021 draft concluded.
All right, Chris Trapasso, appreciate you, buddy. You deserve I hope you get like 4 weeks of sleep. Hope that's like what follows after the draft. Thanks for making time.
All right, Bill. Thanks a lot. Anytime.
All right, pal. Be good. Chris Trapasso on the program. Appreciate his insight and his perspective. Phone number 855-2124-CBS. By the way, one of you just, Aaron Crow, just broke me into a million pieces. Tweeted at me at SportsWriter, Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R, a MLB tweet. This is a real MLB tweet. It's at MLB. I'm just going to read you the tweet. These baseballs are headed to a galaxy far, far away. And then it's literally guys swinging their bats, but they're lightsabers. I also hate it because it looks cool, but it's stupid and it's dumb. Also, a lightsaber would cut a baseball in half. Like, that's how that works. It'd be like the Kill Bill scene where he throws the baseball and Kiddo, Beatrice Kiddo, cuts it in half. Come on. God. So dumb. And it looks good. That's what makes me mad. You have kids all over America who think this is baseball. You know what's going to happen? They're going to be bored when they watch it. But where's the lightsaber? This is dumb. Let's go play video games. Cool. America got a little smarter. And by a little smarter, I mean a little dumber. 855-2124-CBS is the phone number. Make fun of John Elway next year on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
I was sort of expecting this, but you never know. Got a note from the NBA over the weekend, maybe Friday, that I will be, again, I did this for 3 or 4 years in a row, and then it went away. I will be voting for, I'll be one of the, I guess, 100 media members who vote for the NBA awards, which is exciting. And I can't pretend to have aggressively dug into the data, and I'll absolutely call people in the business to get perspectives. I know Nikola Jokic is the odds-on favorite. I get it. I'm just not there yet. I'm probably going to get there. He did not look like an MVP last night. I watched that game. He didn't score 30. He had like 28 points inefficiently. But it was more about, and he played pretty well in the last half of the fourth quarter. But an MVP imposes his will on the game, right? Lifts his team up. I think it's close. I think it's tough. So many injuries make it really difficult. And we're probably, what I'm about to describe for the Warriors is unlikely to occur. But if the Warriors win out and pull themselves up to and the Lakers have to lose, and they could. Lakers won yesterday, but they still have what? They have Clippers, Suns, Trailblazers, Knicks over the next four. I might have the middle games inverted, but those are the next four games. They could lose all four of those games. They could lose three of those games. If somehow the Warriors pull themselves out of that play-in, I think Steph Curry deserves a real chance, a real look. I mean, the real difficulty for me and for people that vote is going to be, I think, 2-5. It's 5 votes for MVP. A lot. By the way, another thing that's going to be really tough is Coach of the Year. Where do you turn for that? I think Quinn Snyder deserves a lot of respect and love. I think Monty Williams deserves a lot of respect and love. There's a lot of people. I probably can't get down with Doc Rivers, but I guess I should look at it, though I don't really believe it, so I say it out loud, it's not true. I think Chris Paul will probably end up on my ballot. I mean, it's hard because how do you weigh and assess excellence of those who have not been around much, and how do you weigh it in those who have been paired on a super team? Harden getting hurt probably makes my life a lot easier. I don't think I could have put Harden on my ballot, and I think a lot of people would push for him to be number one or number two. And it's not personal. I mean, as you know, if you listen to the show, I'm pretty aggressive in going after Chris Paul on things that I've experienced. That doesn't change the fact that I think he's wildly impactful. And I'll tell you this crazy thought. Let's say that Jokic had been hurt for 4 weeks, right? Just 3 weeks ago, had gone down to injury, and it was just wide open. It's probably Steph Curry won for me, and it might be Chris Paul, too. And he doesn't have the statistical backing, and I don't think many people are going to put him on the ballot. And we've had folks, Howard Beck and Sam Amick, and I don't want to misquote those two guys, but certainly voices along those lines saying, yeah, I don't know. And then they say, well, you have the Utah problem. Not for me. That Utah team's grown as a team over the course of many years. Chris Paul hasn't. He just showed up in Phoenix, and they might be the bet. They might win the Western Conference. Pretty amazing. I don't know the author and writer, Michael Silver. But I am still going to, just for the moment, and by the way, writer than nobody. Stuff I've written before could be called writer than nobody. I could point you to a column in 2010-11 I wrote that the Heat would never, ever, ever, literally like 12 evers, ever, 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 ever beat the Celtics in a 7-game series. And when they lost, my colleagues who I was on the road with called me ever, 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 ever for like 3 weeks. They really liked it. So I say this with someone who's been there, but Mike Silver, bullet to the truth, is where I'm at right now. Again, you get access. I get to hang out at the Broncos facility. But cannot. He misses this column. It's about how John Elway is just like so successful. And he's in his leather chair, and he's so just chill, and he's so happy that he hired a good person. A, I don't know if I believe that Elway's out of the picture. And B, the story of winning 71 of the first 100 games with him as the GM is not the entire story. The fact that there were, I think, 10 quarterbacks since Peyton Manning retired have started for the Broncos, and they're the only team in NFL history. Let me just let this sink in. Who missed the next 5 playoffs after winning the Super Bowl? Yeah, that's a real. He's in a leather chair looking at the world he has wrought in his excellence. His masculine jaw shines in the sun even though we're inside, and we marvel.
Do we? Yeah, we marvel. We marvel. I mean, what a disaster that guy was. He recruited Peyton Manning as much as Magic recruited LeBron James. Yeah, yeah. Remember that story? And I told you that was garbage. It was all Magic. Fast forward a year later, I quit. No, somebody tell Jeannie. I'm out. Yeah, yeah. It was a real connection. LeBron demanded a trade exactly 7 seconds after nothing. Come on. Manning made an assessment and decided he wanted to be a Bronco, and he was a Bronco. Here's another thought, and it's just obvious, but Indianapolis, how crazy the world is. I don't think anybody would argue that a mistake was made. The Colts
sucking for luck and moving on for Manning. He didn't know where he was at health-wise. But, obviously, the Broncos have since won a Super Bowl with Peyton Manning, and the Colts are nowhere near that. And they have a good team. They have a good roster. But, they don't have a quarterback. Hard to predict that Andrew Luck is going to walk away from the game. I get it. My point is the Peyton Manning effect is what that was. Not the John Elway effect. So please save the stories about Elway's excellence and how he handpicked the GM and it's all. Because I don't know why the Broncos didn't draft a quarterback. And maybe, as Chris Trapasso said, they're going to go get Aaron Rodgers. But if they don't, but you're going to draft like 38 bad quarterbacks when you finally have a chance to draft a good one, you're going to pass? They zig, we zag. Yeah, they win, you lose. That's crazy like that, huh? It's crazy. We don't want to do it like the Chiefs do. Successfully? Awesome. We're not the Chargers. No. No, sadly, you're not. It also would have just been cool. Aaron Rodgers with the Broncos would be amazing because that division would be amazing. Oh, my God. Chiefs-Broncos games? And those teams hate each other. My Uncle Bob. Hey, Uncle Bob is so irrational about the Broncos that he used to send me all kinds of notes when they would win or whatever. Bears would lose. Chiefs would lose. He doesn't like them when they go out. I love them. I don't do that like once a year. How's the Broncos doing? Haven't paid attention. You hear things breaking in his house in Denver. That is a real rivalry. It is a very real deal. I got to get some baseball games. I guess we're getting there, right? Feeling normal. Had my buddy in town this weekend. Vaccinated. I'm vaccinated. He's vaccinated. Walking around. It's weird because I'm still wearing a mask, but the CDC guidelines say you do not have to under certain circumstances outside if you're fully vaccinated. It's just hard to believe that everybody I see with their mask off is fully vaccinated, right? But it feels like a touchstone to what's coming. And I was talking to my kids about this. They want to go to baseball games. My wife's not quite there yet. She doesn't have the second shot yet. But the idea of this summer going to Dodgers games, let's say one weekend or night, and then going to Angels games, which is a real thing. Think about that. The Dodgers are the best team in baseball. They're the most interesting team in baseball. I mean, they're just loaded with talent. And the Angels, to me, are as interesting a pull. Shohei Ohtani night? Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout? Wherever you're listening, I hope you're able to get to a ball game or two in the foreseeable future in a safe way. It's going to feel, for me, it's going to be one of the weirdest, coolest I'm back moments in terms of, like, I'm back to some semblance of a normal life. Phone number here on the show, 855-212-4CBS. Tom, how many baseball games had you gone to the 2 or 3 years before the shutdown?
That's an interesting question. Fewer than I had the years before that, but usually we do 5 to 10 a season, something like that.
That's a lot.
Yeah, we used to do way more, too. My buddy who has Dodger season tickets actually just went for the first time last Thursday. Back for the first time since 2019. He had gone all year last year, and he also doesn't have Spectrum, so he can't watch them on TV. So he has to go to watch. He has to go to the game, and he still stayed away since the end of 2019.
That it's insane how hard it is to watch. It's gotten a little better, but it is not a guarantee you can watch Dodgers games in LA.
Yeah, that is, talk about unacceptable. That is a travesty.
And he has season tickets.
He does, yeah.
Why doesn't he just go get Spectrum? He just doesn't want it.
I guess it's not available where he was living?
There's a few places, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you would think in a streaming world, they'd be able to just offer a package, right?
You would think so.
But that would be Major League Baseball doing things that make sense for their fans and their sport. So let's not get carried away. My goal, I ask it because my goal is to get to 10 games this year with my kids or with the boys, right? Like just to really commit to, and I'm in a market like you are that has two teams. And actually, I got Adam Klug's buddy down on the home of the Padres. He's the program director. I'll go to a Padres game or two, too. That's a beautiful ballpark and a beautiful town.
And he felt totally safe inside. The only iffy part is, like, coming and going. So if you're really sensitive to it, that's when there are crowds. That's when you're sharing the most air and close proximity to people. But when he was inside, he said it was completely comfortable.
I have no problem showing up for a baseball game in the first or second. I used to do this all the time at Wrigley when I was poor. And at Iowa Cubs games in Des Moines, Iowa, just when I lived next to the ballpark, you go in the second or third inning, you get tickets at below face value, and it's still amazing. I know it's considered. I understand the judgment people have. You can't. You're not a real baseball fan. But those same people leave in this eighth inning to beat traffic. Like, what do you? I'd rather show up in the second inning, and then I love letting the ball. My thing is, I let the ballpark empty. I like sitting in my chair. Game's over. Lights are on. Empty field. Some ball players milling around, talking to their family, and just especially at Wrigley, just that feeling is amazing. That's a good point. I'll show up in the second inning. I'll run around in the parking lot with my kids and play wiffle ball. All right, 855-212-4CBS. We will get to buy or sell, but first let's get a CBS Sports Radio update from Brad Heller.
All right, Bill, we'll start in the NFL. The Ravens reportedly signing Pro Bowl offensive tackle Alejandro Villanueva to a 2-year deal. He'll play right tackle, replacing Orlando Brown Jr., who was traded to the Chiefs last month. Jets defensive lineman Quinnen Williams, word is he broke a small bone in his foot and will likely have surgery, but he is expected to be ready to go for training camp this summer. Jimmy Garoppolo has some competition now, of course, after the Niners drafted Trey Lance, number 3 overall last week. Garoppolo joined the DA show here on CBS Sports Radio this morning and was asked if he feels underappreciated after taking the Niners to the Super Bowl just 2 years ago.
That's not really the NFL. It's a what have you done for me lately type of business. And I know that. I've known that my whole career. It's just one of those things. You got to got to go and do it again. So can't be satisfied with just doing it once. Got to go every season. Just keep going at it.
NHL news. Washington Capitals winger Tom Wilson has been fined $5,000. That's the maximum allowable under the CBA for roughing up the Rangers' Pavel Buchnevich last night. No further discipline. Wilson also slammed Artemi Panarin to the ice. The Rangers obviously wanted much more as Wilson has been suspended 5 times by the NHL over his career for all sorts of illegal hits. This is the Rangers' Mika Zibanejad.
I don't know. I figured you should have some more respect for the game and for the players. I don't honestly know where to start. It's just horrible. There's zero respect.
The Rangers were eliminated from playoff contention with a loss to the Caps last night. Blackhawks were eliminated as well. The Oilers and the Bruins both clinched playoff spots. In the NBA, the Sixers have a 1-game lead on the Nets for the top spot in the Eastern Conference. Philly beat the Bulls last night for a 5th straight win. Tonight, the Nets will wrap up a 2-game series with the Bucks. In Milwaukee, the Bucks won by 3 on Sunday. The Jazz have a 1/2-game lead on the Suns for the top spot in the West. Utah beat San Antonio last night. Tonight, the Suns will be in Cleveland. The Lakers snapped a 3-game losing streak. They topped the Nuggets 93-89. That was without LeBron, who rested a sore ankle. The Lakers all alone in 5th now in the West. The Warriors and the Pelicans are going to play again for the second night in a row. The Warriors winning last night 123-108. Steph Curry outscored Zion 41-32. From baseball, Dodgers pitcher Dustin May needs Tommy John surgery. The Dodgers and the Cubs are going to play a day-night doubleheader at Wrigley today. Kershaw and Bauer, the 2 starters for L.A. L.A. a 1/2-game behind the Giants for first in the NL West. The Giants and the Rockies are going to play a doubleheader at Coors today. The Padres are a game back. They shut out the Pirates last night 2-0. The Cardinals have won 5 straight, edging the Mets 6-5. Nolan Arenado a 3-run homer. Cardinals and Brewers tied for first in the NL Central. The Phillies beat the Brewers 4-3. ESPN says Michigan's Franz Wagner is going to enter the NBA draft. And from soccer, Roma has named Jose Mourinho as its new manager just 2 weeks after he was fired by Tottenham. Bill, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Bill Ryder with you, 855-212-4CBS. Let's do buy or sell next here on CBS Sports Radio.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
Tom DiBenedetto. We got to settle one thing once and for all.
Yes, I call
you Tom. Mm. Your personal email address is Tommy. Your signature is Tommy. Are you you can be many things, but if you choose, are you Tom or Tommy?
Professionally, I'm Tom.
You're Tom on this show?
Yeah. Yeah.
If we're
personally,
getting a beer,
you know, my fiance calls me Tommy. My mom sometimes, you sometimes. So people very close to me call me Tommy, and I have no problem with that. But professionally, officially, it's just T-O-M.
So Tom on the show, but like, let's say we're getting a beer, and you're like, "Hey, dude, I'm gonna hit the restroom. Do you want a beer on the way back?" I'm like, "Tommy, I'll take a pale ale."
That's fine. Yeah,
that's the move.
Yeah, I don't have a big preference about it. I mean, I call you William all the time as
True.
Like a mix up.
True.
I don't think that offends you. If it does, I'm sorry.
I used to be offended when Tim Bontemps would call me Billy, but it's not Jackass. So, I'll take it.
Or Sweet Willie. I don't do that.
Sweet Willie, I'm just bemused by it. I talked to Jim Jackson the other day. I called him about something. And he's like, "Hey, what's up, Sweet Willie?" It's like, "Oh yeah, that thing still." And still Ryan Field, dude. Ryan Field does. He's a sports anchor there in town for, I think, for ABC in New York City, which is a big job.
Yeah.
Only calls me Sweet Willie. I don't even think he knows my first name.
Well, at least I don't do that. All right, so you've already vocalized your displeasure at ESPN's Marvel-inspired broadcast of Warriors-Pelicans last night. They're back at it tonight. They will broadcast a May the 4th edition of Yankees versus Astros, which will, of course, incorporate Star Wars themes to the broadcast. According to Offal announcing, the broadcast will also feature Carl Ravitch dressed as Luke Skywalker, Tim Kirkjian dressed as Yoda, and Eduardo Perez dressed as a Jawa. Seriously, that's the broadcast team. They will be in costume tonight. Buy or sell, you are any more interested in this than last night's Marvel NBA broadcast?
Sell.
I mean, sell.
You could have written buy or sell, you're more interested in putting a tack through your thumb, and I would have thought about it for just a while. It would have been, you know, I think
buy.
I would have. Yeah, maybe. At least I can control that and bring it to an end after like 7 seconds. At least when I bleed, I'll know that I'm actually alive and not in some hellscape nightmare simulation where they're just messing with us. I mean, I like Star Wars. I like the Marvel movies. Oh, it's a commercial. They're taking our sports and they're turning it into a 2-hour commercial and pretending that they're giving us a gift. Look at this gift we're giving. Can we, America, let's not be this dumb together. Let's together just be like, no. The commercials happen when the game is not on, when the guys are like, walking back to the dugout because they struck somebody out. We know how this works. We know how commercials work.
There's already plenty of those. Yeah.
Ugh.
It's also completely stealing the thunder, the fact that this is the first time the Astros are going to be in Yankee Stadium since the cheating scandal.
You're right.
All that broke. This is the very first game. And, you know, they, of course, beat the Yankees in that ALCS. So, like, there is animosity there, and we're just going to try to undercut that all with some, you know, dressed as Yoda commentary.
When one of the Yankees goes headhunting and hits somebody in the shoulder, are they going to turn into like a blaster shot? Cool.
That would actually be great, but no, they can't do that. Hall of Famer Terry Bradshaw joined WFAN's Moose and Maggie yesterday, and let's just say it was quite an appearance. He had strong words for Russell Wilson and his public displeasure with Seattle coaching and the front office, and I'll let his words speak for themselves.
Shut your mouth, play quarterback. You are a blessed man to be making millions that all of us on this Zoom call right now would give anything to make that in a lifetime of earnings. And I have no respect. I have no patience with people that do that. Russell Wilson, just shut your mouth. Play your game. He's upset because they changed their offense after he was leading the league and touchdown passes and was mentioned for leading vote getter for the MVP. And then Pete Carroll went back to the old Pete Carroll days of pound it and grind it and try to play tough defense. And obviously Russell did not like that. Man alive, keep your mouth shut. Just be a team guy, play your ass off and shut up.
Bradshaw also went on to call Aaron Rodgers weak for his draft weekend PR pushback against the Packers. Buy or sell, Bradshaw's scorched earth approach here was warranted.
I always buy the truth.
Buy.
Yeah. He's still howling at the moon and tilting the windmills. It is a sound and fury that will add up to exactly zero. Because this is like telling Hollywood superstars not to be shallow or Kanye not to be weird. I mean, these guys at a certain level of success can be whatever they want, and they've chosen to be the things that Terry Bradshaw said that they are. He's not wrong. It also doesn't matter, you know? I get the, when I was younger and we didn't make the same kind of money and I was tougher, I get it. I got it. I wish Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers would choose to be different, right? And by the way, give Tom Brady credit. He left pretty quietly, and he did all of his talking on the field. Aaron Rodgers' field talking hasn't been quite that impressive. It's been the off the field, right? Aaron Rodgers wins Jeopardy. Tom Brady just keeps winning Super Bowls. But they're talented, and they get to get away with what they get to get away with. That's the deal.
Sticking in the NFL, they announced yesterday that Amazon will be the exclusive home of Thursday Night Football starting with the 2022 season a year earlier than the original plan. which was supposed to debut on the service in 2023. The NFL, Fox, and Amazon have apparently struck a deal in which Fox will relinquish the TNF package early, allowing Amazon to take over. Buy or sell the move to a streaming membership service will ultimately hurt Thursday Night Football.
I do not think it will.
Sell.
I think it doesn't mean it's going to work, but I don't think it'll have any impact. I think people understand now that, and they're going to understand even more by 2022, that you're going to have to pay to stream. I mean, Tom, you and I have had these conversations where you didn't love some of the requirements for streaming realities for soccer. And my sort of thing was, that's the bit, right? That's the business model. I mean, I work for CBS Sports HQ as well as here, and Paramount Plus charges for Champions League, and I'm all for it. Like, all my friends complained, and now they all subscribe to Paramount Plus. I think basically 7 seconds after I said, no, you can't have my password. Like, all my buddies.
Yeah,
I think people will be used to it. I do. I think if they want to watch the NFL, they'll go subscribe to Amazon Prime.
The Dodgers are still reeling from the loss of Dustin May, who will miss the remainder of the season, and then some with Tommy John surgery. The UCL damage in his elbow will be repaired via surgery today, and stunningly puts what was very recently the deepest rotation in baseball in a tough spot just 1 month into the season, with David Price and Tony Gonsolin also currently unavailable. LA is considering using Trevor Bauer every 4 days to pick up the slack. Bauer is apparently on board and says he prefers pitching on 3 days rest. Buy or sell, the Dodgers should go old school with Bauer and pitch him every 4 days for the foreseeable future.
I'm going to do a qualified buy.
Buy!
Because if you look at how their schedule lines up, they don't have to do that for a couple weeks. The end of May is when they'd have to go with that. So I think you do it, but you might go every 4 days, two starts, and then do a bullpen game or their top prospect in baseball, there's pressure to bring him up, and they're not gonna make that mistake. Or roll in some guy, right? Just some dude that's an innings eater. There's a guy in their bullpen who probably can't go more than 3 or 4 innings, but started a bunch of games in 2019 in the minor leagues last time there was a full minor league season. So I think there are ways to do it. I think, yes, you utilize Trevor Bauer's ability to be somewhat of a workhorse, but not the way that most other organizations would. I think it's a middle ground is what I would push for.
So the Warriors defeated the Pelicans last night in that Marvel broadcast. It was another stellar performance from Steph Curry and an impressive triple-double from Draymond Green. After the game, Dre discussed the fear Steph is causing around the league.
Teams are terrified of him, and everywhere he runs on the floor, with or without the ball, teams are terrified. And, with that type of gravity, he pulled a lot of weight, even when he's not the one, I could be the one making the pass, but it's him creating for other guys.
These two teams actually play a rematch tonight. Buy or sell, Zion and the Pels win the rematch.
Man, I love Draymond Green. I'm going to sell that. I think
sell.
I think the Warriors get it done. I think they win. I think they pour in the points. They've been pretty good defensively this year too, and I think this is closer time. This is closing time. Pelicans have been underwhelming, and the Warriors may be underwhelming talent-wise compared to the last few years, but they've got Steph Curry. That's a show. That was fast. It's a fast show. Tom DiBenedetto crushing it. Andrew Bogus not here today because I sent him a UFO story and he couldn't get out of bed or something. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I'm Bill Ryder. Show is Ryder than you. Thank you for hanging out. We appreciate you. And we'll see you back here tomorrow on CBS Sports Radio.